Are we not doing video?
Hmm?
Are we not doing video?
Oh, yeah, we're doing the video.
Why? It's not on.
Because it's still in the intro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right now, the gears are...
Over there, he has it over there. He switched those two computers. Normally, we can see our video over there, and you're looking at the wiggle waggle over there.
Okay, there it is.
The other way around now.
No, yeah. Just the light on the camera was on.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I should tell the gals, too. When they go live, that the actual light on the camera clicks in.
Yeah.
Because they're usually just chatting away, and then I have to say, like, hey, you guys are live. And then they yell at me for not telling them that they're alive already. And then they go live and they talk. Hey, welcome to Crippled System, episode 230. This is not a prime number.
Yeah.
My name is Andy, and I play blacksmiths, butchers, and Kator.
My name is Nathan, and I play minions. And today I played Sardic Nor.
And minions very well, apparently.
Not really. No, I don't. No.
And I'm Dave, and most recently I played Kador, but maybe branching into Rhett and Crix in the near future.
Sure.
I don't know. It's all up in the air.
All up in the air.
Yep.
Oh, so Nathan and I went through a long day today of playing some Twilight Imperium 4.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very long day.
Is it the Twilight Imperium 4 rulebook you're reading?
Yeah, I was trying to double check something because I was, but this is the quick play rulebook, not the full in-depth ones. I was trying to correct somebody on the internet, but I would need the full rulebook.
Oh, you're one of those people like me that it's just it is an unbalance in the force when somebody is wrong on the internet.
Well, right, and because they were saying that you can only score two objectives in a turn, and that's not true. You can score two objectives, one public and one secret per status phase. But you have two other secret objectives, so if in theory those were both action phases, you could score both of those. So that's four objectives you can do in a phase. And if you took the Imperium strategy card, you could score another public. So you could do three secrets and two publics in a single turn. It's just the status phase that limits you. So that's five objectives. And actually, if you had Mechatol, so you could get 8 points in a single turn.
Potentially.
Yeah.
It depends on the... what phase you are, if you're in the...
If there's two pointers, yeah. So it has to be turn six or later. But yeah, you can score 8 points in a single turn, and the game's only to 10, so you're never out of it.
Nope, I was out of it.
Sure, yeah. Well, as with most Euro... I was going to say economy games first, then I was going to say Euro games, then I was going to say war games. So I'm just going to realize it's true of all and say, as with most games, you need to start your momentum early.
Yeah.
And I think you were just one turn behind your expansion. You didn't want to attack Chris because you knew that we had talked about it as a war game. You didn't want to just start smashing people.
Correct.
And so Chris took a spot that you should have either talked him out of or talked him into leaving or just smashed him out of there and said, hey, no hard feelings. But you not wanting to attack him there really put you behind the pace.
Yeah, it put me in behind. And it was also, I didn't read any of the quick start rules. And it's been like 6 years since I've really played Twilight Imperium. And I only played the third edition. But I did well in that. I know I won a couple times in it. And then it was just me. I didn't want to be grumbly, so I was trying to avoid being grumbly. And I was trying to slowly taking grasps at the game itself. I was basically trying to absorb what I can and cannot do in the game.
Yep.
And by the time I really kind of caught on to what I can and cannot do, I was playing the turtles and I was turtling.
Yeah. Well, what happened to me, I actually ended up recovering from it quite well. I ended up getting to 9 points out of 10. But early in the game... because I wasn't even there. Like, I was going to say I took Mechatol Rex, and you people all voted that I had to do it, but I wasn't even took it because I failed to take Mechatol Rex. But
I think it was Chris.
I blockaded. No, Dan took it turn, like, two.
Yeah.
And then I attacked his fleet, and I landed, and even though I am just voracious warmonger, best in combats, and he's literally the worst in combat, the dice said no. So I failed to take it from him. We just mutually destroyed, so the planet sat empty. And then you assholes all voted, and I had this huge fucking armada surrounding this thing. Like, I had I could destroy the world with this armada. And they voted, hey, let's explore the ruins of Mechatol Rex for ancient technology. And do you know it has a 50-50 chance of happening if you explore the ancient ruins of a lost civilization for ancient technology?
Does it blow up?
It blows up, and every ship around the planet is immediately destroyed. And that's bad for Nathan.
And then every adjacent one yeah. also takes damage too. So yeah, not only was Nathan's main fleet destroyed, some of his remaining fleet four squares away.
Which, I voted against doing that.
Thinking about this again, I think you had four things or whatever the remaining ones in there, and that person that was on that.
I had nothing in there. It was just the dude.
It was just the dude?
It was just the dude.
Okay.
All and right, I would so have to check the card if it's just space units or if it actually hits dudes on neighboring planets. Either way, Brian was like, I'm going to get hit too. And he had like fighters. It's like, oh.
He had fighters.
You lost two fighters. I lost $17 worth of dreadnoughts and capital ships. It was very bad for me.
Brian had maybe about six models that wasn't on the table by the end of the game.
Yeah, he didn't want to do it, but unfortunately the situations forced him to be un-Brianistically aggressive and warmongery.
No, yeah. Brian's in chat. He could be here right now talking about this too.
He's doing laundry.
No.
So my favorite Twilight Imperium moment was a few years ago. A friend of mine had a bachelor party, and because we are geeks, his idea for a bachelor party was to rent a chalet in the Smoky Mountains, and we went there and got locked in for 3 days and did nothing but play board games for three days straight. And there was a lot of alcohol, and there was a lot of alcohol and a lot of caffeine and nothing but board game after board game after board game.
I thought you were going to say that you guys played a game of Twilight Imperium and then the wedding had to be called off because they were still playing Twilight Imperium.
We did play...
Third edition, that might be the case.
Yeah, we did play a game of third edition Twilight Imperium, eight players for 12 hours.
Yeah.
And at the end, and it ended, and myself and the gentleman that was getting married tied at the end. And then 2 days later, after we had all driven back to Kentucky, where I was living at the time, and shout out to Joe if you're listening, if you still play War Machine. Joe, my friend that was getting married, emailed the group and he said, oh, by the way, I looked it up in the rule book that Dave had the initiative at the time, so he would have won before I did.
Yep.
And so this was my crowning moment as a gamer, because not only did I win a 12-hour, eight-player game of Twilight Imperium.
You did it a week later.
But I did so several days after the game had taken place on a technicality. It was beautiful.
Yeah, we looked up that rule about halfway through the game because we knew that was going to happen, where multiple people were going to hit the 10 points at the same time. And the game's like, there is no same time. You do everything in order, so there's no such thing as both of you having the same thing.
And Brian, if Joe gets married again, I'll invite you to the bachelor party.
Yeah, I'll probably bring... Is it
a bachelor party at that point, though?
Well, I mean, you can be a bachelor again.
Just a party.
No, he's single again.
Yeah.
You're a bachelor if you're single. It's not if you've never been married, I don't think. I think it's if you are single.
It's if you're single, yeah.
No, but isn't your status more so divorced at that point?
Well, you are how you define yourself.
Okay, I guess. I guess whatever, you know.
You'll be a divorced bachelor. You're a bachelor via divorce.
I'd still say it's divorced.
Well, that's just racist.
Or was it widowed? And what's the other version?
Widower.
Widower. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or murdered. Or murderer.
But I'm not bringing any. I'm not bringing any War Machine to Adepticon, so I might actually bring TI and maybe play it on Saturday or something.
I'm still deciding what War Machine I'm going to bring.
Because who's the boss on Friday? Right.
Who's the boss is on Friday? Yep.
So. I may bring down and bring Rhett instead of Kador. I don't know.
Sweet. Yeah. Well, I mean, at least TI4 appears to be a game that you could actually bring to an event like that. And not take up the whole entire day.
Well, yeah, because we played relatively slowly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, including teaching, it was 7 hours, right? And so I think it's more like a 6-hour game if you play at a decent click and don't have to do the more. Because I also taught very slowly because I was kind of unsure of myself because I hadn't actually played this version. I had only read the rules and my brain kept skipping to different editions because I've played 3 different editions of this game now. And that hurts the brain.
I think we could have been down to possibly 5 or 6 hours off of this.
Oh, easily.
And then even if you have less people too, then it's less time.
I'd say like hour per player is a leisurely, like, you know, not a difficult target. That's not too bad for an epic game like this.
Yep. So speaking of War Machine, there was an event yesterday. You won.
Yay! You two didn't go. I won on sheer luck. The end.
The only reason why I didn't go is because I was at a Guild Ball event and I had already committed to that event before Rick posted this for the third. Because he posted for the third like 3 weeks ago. Yeah. I mean, it was fairly quick and I had already committed. I went 2-1 at the other place.
Since returning, I'm 6-0 in competitive War Machine and 0-2 in casual War Machine.
I was going to ask you if I'm the only person that has beaten you in the past year.
No, I lost both those games on Wednesday.
But yes, I wasn't there because every other weekend for me is very difficult to schedule. So I stopped by to say hello with my kids and my middle child paint-shamed two different people. It was beautiful.
What? What did he do?
Brian and who was Brian playing?
I don't know.
It was one of the.
You don't have to name the people who got paint-shamed.
We have a lot of Brians.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I think only one active really.
There was only one Brian there. No, there were two Brians there. Yeah. There were two Brians there.
Was it
one Lundy? From the east and one from the west?
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, I don't know.
So one that used to be on here and one whose wife used to be on here.
Oh, okay.
Culp and Kerr.
Oh, yeah.
Dingleberry,
yeah.
Culp and Kerr.
And I'm not supposed to name people.
Please! Pulling teeth!
For some odd reason, I kept on thinking Lundeen. Brian Lundeen. No. And I'm like, but he was never on the podcast. I mean,
but Gysi's not married.
Yeah, Gysi's not married. I don't understand this.
Right, well, according to junk mail, you and Brian were married.
Yes, according to junk mail, we were.
There was Andy Gysi. Was junk mail they got once when they were roommates.
I would.
So Andy got to be the wife.
My name. He'd have to take my name if that was truly the case.
But so my 6-year-old Lars walks up to the table while they're playing. And says, are you ever, stress on the word ever, are you ever going to paint those?
Well, good job, Lars.
At least Culp's got, Celeste is painting their stuff.
Maybe he was talking to Kerr. You don't know.
Oh, that's probably true, too.
There are two Bryans. We just...
How many Bryans are there?
I wish I had something to bribe you to squash that fucking dig for old technology card.
What?
The dig for technology card. You were like, I could squash that, and I had no trade goods. I had no nothing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No.
Sorry.
Yeah, I had nothing to give you. Because I knew it was like, hey, 50% chance we all get technology. I'm like, no, there's a 0% chance that we find technology.
So you remember the objective cards that we had to reshuffle back in?
Yeah.
Because of that there. The one I put in, and that's why I was asking that question, which meant that it's possible that Brian could have got it, which was an objective point to control all four wormholes.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
To control two of the wormholes, and which meant that Brian could have probably won even quicker.
Yeah.
I had to make sure quickly. I pulled that out. Yeah, fewer.
Fewer quickerly.
Fewer quickerly, lesserly.
Yeah, there, Brian needed need 2 points, though.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he was already at 8, but I mean, I saw that and I'm like, wait a second. No, I want to. Shouldn't this be how it's supposed to be? And then we decided it was supposed to be that way. And yeah.
The point is, exciting game. Mm-hmm. You are. And your daughter can speak bird, apparently. Yep. She demonstrated it.
Yep.
Yeah. True story. Who could speak bird?
His youngest.
Mm-hmm.
Could speak bird?
Yeah. Well, I spent about a half hour. Babysitting his kids, and they were very
as you were playing your game.
No, I had finished my game, so I was watching another game, and he had informed them that they shouldn't talk to people playing because they would be very distracting, and so they latched onto the fact that I was not playing a game, and so I had to juggle two. Were they like 4 and 6 or something? Oh man, I had to juggle two completely unrelated conversations. But they would sometimes switch each other's conversations because they'd get excited about what the other one was talking about. But they were never on the same conversation at the same time.
Yeah. This is how 4 and 6-year-olds were.
Too bad.
It was fine. Keith's fine.
Keith's daughter was
keeping
him
distracted. Keeping him.
Keith's daughter would have been great to add to that that whole thing, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, tested Lars's math. He was able to figure out 8 minus 1. So good job, man.
So I heard you beat Travis on a 4% assassination.
Well, we did the math and it was actually like a 6% assassination. Oh. But after, yes. Because that's what happens when you give people zero outs except for one in a million, is they take the one in a million, and guess what happens? One in a million times, it happens.
Yep.
But yeah, he was tabling the fuck out of me. That game was bad for me from the moment he won the initiative roll. It was terrible. And yeah, he feeded with Denny too. And then I took my six percenter, got it.
Yeah.
And then immediately just said nothing and pulled up my phone and started texting, because it's like when people lose to a six percenter, you leave them alone for a little while.
Yep.
Yeah.
But he is a better man than I, because I would not. Yeah. Although one time Andy beat me with a six percenter and I just left the store.
Did I?
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
It was at Cedar Rapids one time. You shot Lucant to death, like from behind cover, camping like six with Powell Levins.
I yeah. remember that now. Because that was when I
was that worse than when I completely accidentally killed all of your support?
No, it was definitely worse. It was because this was like, yeah,
it wasn't that. It was stupid things before that. I do remember this game now because
you were playing terrible. Like, you forgot to move your Colossal one round, and then the next round where he had put it, it literally couldn't advance because of like where he put his model. Yeah. So like he was like derp, and Andy's just like I'm like, okay, so game's going, this is good, and it's the championship game, we're in the finals, and it's like derp, and then dicey. Oh, I killed you.
Was that the one with your Colossal that drug one of my boom howlers?
Oh yeah, probably.
Shot and drug. Yeah. I made my tough roll and it drug only to an X point, so it couldn't do any other attacks after that.
Yeah, it
something stupid.
Yeah, and it was like really dumb because it made it so like I couldn't shoot again or something weird like that. Like somehow. How did that work?
Oh, no, because I remember, because it was Boom Howler, because I was playing Drake McBain, and I had
countermeasures
on the
and
fuckers.
I drug him, but I fucked up, and it didn't get drug all the way to me. Like, it hit a wall, and then it tuffed, and then it was 4.5 inches away, so countermeasures was up. That was my own fault, but it was a very frustrating moment, but not as bad as your NIST just shooting, like, a full camp Lucant off the table.
Yeah,
I just had to leave. I just left. I left the room.
I felt bad as I had that.
I felt bad about the game we played because I was the oblivious asshole there, because
you weren't trying to kill my.
I wasn't trying to kill. Yeah, because I was looking at it. It's like, okay, I've got two fully loaded redeemers. I'll chip some damage off of Nate's caster, so I can at least force her to play further back, or I'll kill her next turn. And I launched six shots.
Everyone missed her,
and then randomly, as if they were laser targeted, went over one of his Enigma foundries, and then I spiked the dice on every one of them.
Like, he killed the Enigma foundry with blast damage that wasn't even trying to hit it. Yeah.
I killed, what, three of them? Something like that.
Yeah.
And I was getting frustrated because none of my shots went where I was like, on average, I should have had two of them on Aurora.
I'm taking Enigma Foundries off the table, and he's like, damn it, this is going really badly. And I was like, I will fucking kill you, you piece of shit. You goddamn.
Well, that sounds like an Andy play entirely.
Yeah. You bearded assholes with your heat seeking.
AoE is drifting so good.
Yeah.
God, I tilted Jim one time when I drifted a random Vanquisher shot to an Ashlyn that was off, basically way out of its range, behind a forest.
Yep.
I set her on fire, and she basically just ran around on fire, slowly dying for the rest of the game. Fire never went out.
One of my favorite drifts you ever got on me, Andy, was Madeline Corbeau came out. I bought her, glued her into the base. While her glue is still drying, I sit down for a game against Andy, all excited to try out Madeline Corbeau. Oh. And she moves up, and she's pretty safe, and he shoots at something, and it deviates 6 inches to the two, and clips Madeline Corbeau, and he like does a boxcar and just kills her. Never even got to use her. But I got revenge, because that corpse I made into a thrall with Alexia and the Risen, just a basic little Risen, and that fucker boxcarred Iris and killed her.
Oh,
I remember her getting revenge card. This is for not letting Nate play Madeline Corbeau.
Yeah, you can't sucker blast damage.
No. Oh, well. Good old War Machine talk.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I could talk a second about Guild Ball. Yeah, I just, like Seconds I said, I. Oh.
That was a good second, though. I say, son.
The foghorn leghorns.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the part of the fog.
And that's Porky Pig.
Oh, yeah, that's true. No, I went with Jeremy Kofit up to Manitowoc. I played in a blacksmith's entry event. I went 2-1. Jeremy went 2-1. We both lost against the person that won it all.
Cool.
So I felt like I did pretty well. I did decent against Johnny. Johnny
Pastrami?
Yeah, Johnny Pastrami. He's really goddamn good in that game. And he is my kryptonite. I cannot beat him at all. I've done well against other players, but I cannot beat Johnny Pastrami. He is goddamn too good for right now.
Your kryptonite is incredibly good players.
Turns out.
Yes. If there's one thing I can't beat, it's good incredibly good players. I don't know what it is about them.
Jeremy's pretty good, though. Jeremy and I have like some good knockout brawls, but I have yet to beat Johnny. I've come kind of close, but usually once he gets rolling with the points and that, it's hard to recover from some of those characters' plays.
Cool. It's a fun game, Guild Ball.
Nope. Yeah, I like it.
I'll never play it.
You might, eventually.
Maybe.
I got Popeye's chicken and some Popeye's chicken, some Fireball whiskey, and what other alcohol you like?
Yes.
All right. So we'll just get all that, and then we'll just go in the basement.
You're going to get Nathan all the alcohol?
All the alcohol.
And then take me down into your basement?
take you down into my basement?
To play with your balls?
We're going to play some Guild Ball.
I'm going to gild your ball.
Ooh.
Nathan, I thought you were the one with the sex dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's more than a sex dungeon. It's sex apartments.
Well, you know.
So you looked into seeing what you have to do to possibly like rent out places, or do you have to have like a...
Yeah, we're not. Yeah.
So I was going to say, you could probably make up some extra funds too by if you would rent out you could Craigslist it or something.
Sure.
Some responsible renters for a couple rooms or so.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah.
I mean, that could end up paying for most of your mortgage.
We can look into like what a B&B style thing would cost, or you know what the necessary things are. First, we have to fix up, you know, the kitchens and whatnot. But it's definitely something that's been discussed. And although for now, the nice thing is what we were just saying. I think you would have left at this point, but I was talking to Brian and Justin about this. I can do the Rikyo Rumble style thing where people from out of town can just come and stay there for like a whole like 3 days and basically just have a little mini con with, you know, a dozen friends there.
I mean, I just got done watching the Waco thing, so we could start up something like that.
That was the other plan, was just to start a cult. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you just have to, you know, believe that you're, you know, the Messiah. Or not the Messiah, just a Messiah.
A Messiah, yeah. Messiah.
He wasn't saying that he was. I mean, the Messiah is just more of just...
No, I'm pretty sure Messiah there's only one of.
Poseidon? What?
Yeah, I think Messiah was, by definition, just one. Prophets you can have multiple of, but I think the Messiah is specifically preordained son of God brings blah, 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 blah.
No, but you know, Messiah was more so just bringing,
depends on whether you're talking about the Jewish or Christian tradition.
No, that depends on whether you think Jesus was the Messiah. All three Abrahamic faiths believe a Messiah will come. It's just only one of the three thinks that Jesus was it. The other two think we're still waiting. Like, even Islam doesn't think that Muhammad was the Messiah. He was just a prophet. Okay. He was just a dude that kicked ass, and God spoke through him and everything. But they still were like, you're cool, God's talking through you, but you ain't the Messiah. Sure. And so that's where the difference is, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, it's only the Christian tradition that believes that the Messiah is the Son of God. The Jewish Messiah, in some Jewish traditions at least, is a purely secular figure.
Okay, but there's still a specific dude that they're waiting.
Yeah, and in Islam, the Mahdi, I may be butchering that term, but is also just a dude.
Muad'Dib?
Mahdi, M-A-H-D-I, is the standard transliteration.
Not Muad'Dib?
No, it's not Muad'Dib.
Okay.
There's the...
Because Muad'Dib, we know when he comes. I mean, we have documentaries about Muad'Dib's rise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that character is in some ways based off of the Islamic concept of the Mahdi.
What?
Turns out.
What? Yeah. Stuff in Dune is based on the Islamic faith?
Oh, yeah.
Why, I never. The thing where half the language is Arabic, which is mildly disguised.
But yeah, the Mahdi is also not a son of God, although he may be immortal depending on the particular tradition.
Isn't Kwisatz Haderach like literally just Arabic? Like, I don't think they even disguise that one.
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. But yeah, Dune is basically just Islam as fuck.
Well, it's Dune got a lot of sand.
Well, yeah. So obviously the Fremen, yeah, the Fremen obviously are you know, like at the time they would more have represented the Bedouin, like the Bedouin tribes,
sure,
against Imperial Import. And now obviously it would be more, you would think of being like ISIS style resistance fighters.
Do you have the copy of the first book?
I sure do. Yeah.
Can I borrow it?
Yeah,
you absolutely don't have could. A copy of the first book?
Huh?
And he's not a huge reader.
I used to read a lot, but that was when I was in the Army,
yeah,
and I had nothing to do but sit in my right. truck and read.
Yeah, yeah.
But I kind of fell off the planet in that regards. Mm. I just don't read as much. I know I'm supposed to be reading a book for your guys' eventual...
Technically three books.
Why, oh, damn it, because I'm not even reading the first one.
Yeah, well, that is... The thing you have, oh no, maybe not. No, because I have
that
the thing.
Keith gave me.
I don't know if his, because the one I have is all three in one.
No, it's not all three in one. It's about the eighth yeah. or so.
Like, and you're talking like paperback size?
Yeah.
Because mine's only a little bit thicker than that, but it's like, you know, a full 8x10 size. And,
sure. It doesn't look like there's actually much per page on there, too. But yeah. No, I mean, I used to read a lot. I mean, like all the Bachman books for Stephen King, you know. Early 90s is kind of when I stopped.
Yeah. I used to read a lot, and then I was in grad school, and I still read a lot, but it's almost entirely publications and computer science.
Yeah, I'm looking into, I need to get, once we move the furniture and get a cable set up and everything and force ourselves to actually live at the new place as opposed to just occasionally driving there, I need to get an Audible subscription or something and just do books on tape, because 2-hour round-trip commute every day, that's plenty of time to... I mean, or I can just read books while driving.
I mean, I've seen people do that. I mean, it's...
Keith has a great story about he ran out of gas because he couldn't see his gas gauge because he was watching House of Cards on his iPad. He just, like, propped it right there. He was just driving and watching House of Cards. And by great story, I mean horrifying story.
I mean, I could. I play WoW enough where I'm watching something on the side, though. But there are times, though, when I'm watching something on the side and my character just runs off a cliff.
Yeah. I tell myself, I'm like, oh, I could do that kind of stuff. And then occasionally I hit a rumble strip and I'm like, maybe I should put the phone away.
Yeah, no, that's, oh, man.
Yeah. So we all think we can do the thing we yell at other people for doing, right? You see some asshole veering and he's texting. I'm like, put your phone down. What are you doing driving while texting? And then over there I go.
Yeah.
So Arctic Circle is starting a fight on the chat room, asking any version of the movie Dune that we'd suggest. I like the Lynch version, and I am getting out of Nathan's reach at the moment.
No, well, you know, there's almost a good version of Dune.
I like the special effects.
There's a boring miniseries and a bizarre as fuck movie, and those are your two choices.
We've talked about this before. I want to build the plexiglass cosplay of the armor that they have in their knife.
Yeah.
I mean, David,
everyone would think they were in fucking like Minecraft or something like that. That's what people
that's
would
the
think.
Yeah. That's the problem.
But no, we're fucking weird ass Dune.
It's the most tolerable David Lynch film.
It's actually the only David Lynch film I like. So,
when it's whole fucking hog, like Eraserhead, I'm almost okay with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost okay with Eraserhead because it's bizarre enough and it's early enough in his career that I feel like it's honest. Everything else he ever did, I think he's trying to be weird.
I think I actually had Eraserhead. And this is back when Netflix was sending out CDs or DVDs.
Sure.
And I had that sitting on my counter for about 6 months before I just decided to send it back.
Yeah.
It got shipped to me and I just never watched it.
Yeah, I think Dune is the only David Lynch movie I've actually been able to sit through the whole thing without getting bored or frustrated and doing something else.
Yeah, the Dune mythos, him needing to stick to somebody else's story reined him in just enough that it actually has a coherent plot line.
Is it something we care about? Is it more so his writing or just directing?
His directing is okay, like because he can do visuals and stuff like that. He's not a bad director. He just desperately feels the need for shit to be weird because he thinks weird is cool, and it isn't always.
Is that so? I mean, because he's got a ton of shit in his IMDb. So I mean, I'm looking back, and he's a lot of just video, like 9-inch nails and...
Yeah, and that's fine, because he can do visuals well. It's when he writes stories. And he can do interesting stuff. It's just he goes way too far sometimes. Like, I think it's Lost Highway, where the main character meets the weird guy, and the weird guy has the main character call himself at home, and the weird guy's also there. And it's like, that's actually a cool, surreal scene. Lost Highway is tolerable as well. It's fucking Mulholland Drive, and then he just had another one come out called...
Blue Velvet? Not bad?
Blue Velvet's okay. Yeah. Earlier in his career, like, so... God, I talk about David Lynch a lot on this fucking podcast because people try to troll me.
It's kind of almost before, I think pretty much after Twin Peaks is really when...
Eraserhead is completely batshit insane and makes no sense, and it's okay because it's honest about that, and it feels like it's him actually trying to be... It feels like it's coming from his heart. Yeah. It feels like he's trying to say something with the absurdity. And then things like Lost Highway and Blue Velvet and... 80% of Twin Peaks feels like there's a coherent story that has some bizarre touches to it.
Sure.
And then things like Mulholland Drive feel like he's like, well, I'm supposed to be weird, so here's some stupid shit, and it's all garbage.
Just like sort of like what happened with Steve Irwin, the Crocodile Hunter, that he was actually like that, and then he spawned a horde of imitators that just did it for the camera.
Correct. Correct, yeah. Only Lynch is his own imitator, which is sad in a way.
I miss Steve Irwin.
Yeah. Oh, man, I saw his movie in the theater, and it was great.
No, the I don't even know the name of it.
But it was
basically him doing himself.
It was him doing himself, and it was a little bunch of shit. And there was one legitimately great moment in the movie where he just leaves the bad guys to die, and it's amazing because you did not expect it, you know, because, like, these people fall out of their boat, and he pulls up in his boat, and he's, like, breaks the fourth wall, like, he's talking to the camera, and he's like, crikey, you know, blah, 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 and there's danger here and crocodiles, and I should really rescue these men, but, well... nature's way, and then he just motors away and just leaves them there to get eaten by crocodiles, and it's glorious.
Well, he was in Happy Feet.
Was he? Did he, like, play himself or something?
Yeah, he was a voice in Happy Feet.
Huh. As himself or as a character?
No, just as a character. I had no idea about that.
What character?
Trev.
Nah, I don't
know. It was one of... Happy Feet is another great film by George Miller.
Happy Feet is in my top five George Miller movies.
Who's George Miller?
Made a series that you may have heard of, starring a guy named Max, who is either angry or insane, depending on what definition of the word mad you use.
Okay.
And so Frank Miller made the Mad Max movies, and he made Happy Feet.
George Miller, you mean?
George Miller, sorry, not Frank Miller. Frank Miller makes garbage and shit.
He creates awesome shit. He directs shit. He directs and writes shit. Like
Frank Miller, he's like Lynch, where he was okay, he was good, and then fuck All-Star Batman and Robin. Did you read that garbage?
Well, not the new one.
Where Batman kidnaps Robin and makes him live in the cave, surviving off of rats.
Well, that was like this. Yeah, I mean, for Frank Miller, it's like a friend of mine bought me a copy for my birthday 1 year of Dark Knight Returns and the first Sin City. I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I was like, okay, let me get some other stuff with Frank Miller.
No, get nothing else,
like,
ever.
No. Yeah. It's like that was it. It's like that. That's it. Everything else is just.
He is partially responsible for your favorite RoboCop as well.
I do love RoboCop too. But no, he did the Die Hards. He did both Happy Feet. Fucking A. He did the Mad Maxes. He did both Happy Feet. And he did Babe 2, Pig in the City, which is one of the greatest movies ever made.
Yeah.
It is probably my second favorite George Miller film. Like, it is literally Fury Road, Babe 2, Pig in the City. And that, yeah.
Then the other Mad Maxes?
Yeah, probably. See, I don't know. I don't want to start another Jedi versus Empire thing, but I think I like Thunderdome better than Road Warrior. But I think that's partially just as a kid, I saw Thunderdome a lot. And just like the Ewoks, I don't hate the Lost Kids as much as everybody else does in Thunderdome. I don't
hate the Lost Kids.
People hate the Lost Kids, and they're like, Max, they just fallen kids. I love those characters.
To me, it's like two different movies.
Sure.
Because it does change. Once he meets the kids, though, it really changes the tone of the film. I mean, I like Thunderdome a lot. I still like the simplicity of the Road Warrior. Because there's like almost no dialogue in that film.
Road Warrior is solid as fuck.
It's just
solid as fuck. I just don't feel there is as much of a tonal change as people think. Like, because the kids, like, they're dying to, like, quicksand and shit. Like, the kids are, like, it still stays dark. But
he is. The cool part, though, is you find find one of the boys in there in Mad Max Thunderdome.
Yeah.
One of the war boys is, well,
one of the Screw Loose.
Is it Screw Loose?
That's the one with the skull face at Screw Loose, I believe.
Yeah,
the one
with the face. He's all painted up like a war boy.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
He's
yeah.
He's all white skinned. Everything. Yeah. He looks almost exactly like a war boy. So, I mean, they're technically all these movies are in a sense separate, but they have the same baselines for.
Yeah. I mean, that's always an interesting conversation is whether how many of the four Mad Max movies actually have the same main character? Because it's not the four. No. Like, there's no way all four of those have the same character.
Max from Road Warrior and Max from Thunderdome. I would.
You think they're the same Max?
I think they would be potentially the same.
Well, Max. Then here's a question. Are those the same gyrocopter pilots?
Well, that's.
Much if Max so, is the same. Like, and so, yeah, I don't know. Like, and so it's definitely the first Max and the fourth Max. Like, if two are the same, it's only the ones in two and three. Those are the only two that I would even hear an argument they're the same character.
One and two could be. But you'd have to watch one again. And
no, you don't want to watch Mad Max 1 again. Don't watch Mad Max. It's intolerable.
I think it's worth it. We've talked about this before on the podcast. I think it's worth it for at least a viewing so you understand. It's
that
a
is
slow,
George Miller's worst film.
Okay.
What George Miller film is worse than the first Mad Max? I mean, God bless it. It was groundbreaking for its time. It gave us the rest of the series, all of which are great movies. But it is a very...
Babe.
He produced what?
He produced Babe.
Cool.
As well.
Babe was a good movie.
Babe's a good movie.
Yeah.
I love the duck in Babe. That's one of my favorite characters.
Oh, he produced Dead Calm?
There's two things the rooster does. He gets the farmer up in the morning and he makes eggs with the chickens. I tried it with the chickens. It didn't work. It's a great line. Yeah, no. Like, God bless Mad Max. It was inspirational at the time, influential at the time. It broke ground. It started a career, but it is a low budget independent film, and it
Correct.
Shows. It shows.
Correct.
It's kind of like how Clerks. God bless Clerks, but man, the acting on a lot of those actors.
Yeah,
I love the ambulance person or whatever when the old man dies who delivers her lines incredibly stilted, probably the worst delivery I've ever seen of lines, and you can tell that she's reading her script off of her clipboard and her line delivery is still that bad. Well done.
Thank you. I'd mostly managed to forget watching Clerks.
Yeah.
Speaking of Clerks, Kevin Smith almost died.
Yeah, sure did. Hey, don't be super fat and in bad health.
Yeah. At least he wasn't one of the guys that we hear is like, oh, you know, I'll just go home and sleep it off, you know.
He
finished his show and then immediately went to the emergency room.
I did like in his Facebook thing he talked about how he has a great fear of death, he has a fear of his own mortality, but then during when he was having a heart attack and they're putting in the stint and they're like doing everything, he's like, and I was at peace and so I've overcome my fear and blah blah. I was like, no, the brain does that shit to protect you,
yeah.
Like. Give it a week, you'll be terrified of your own death again.
Speaking of things that protect you, that reminded me of the Joe Rogan his comedy routine when he was talking about the kids that were throwing rocks at the lion,
yeah,
or at the tiger.
The tiger, there's a monster in a cage.
Yep. The tiger climbs out and jumps at the person, and you're like, what does your mind do at that moment? Just like I was like a kaleidoscope of colors as your body just releases every single drug in its body. Yeah.
And that's the same thing. Yeah. Well, it's like as you age, your brain just starts to leak a little bit more of those happy chemicals to make you not care that you're getting closer to dying.
Yeah.
Like a 90-year-old and a 30-year-old have very different opinions about the fact that they're going to die eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Even though one of them's closer, ironically, because that's just the brain's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And it's a treacherous piece of shit.
Yeah, I can tell you when I almost died because I fell into a canyon in Arizona. For the couple of minutes during the process and the couple of minutes shortly afterwards, I really didn't care.
Yeah.
And then it was just realized, it's like, wait a second, I almost died.
That's why you get that,
was bad.
Like, it hit me thing that people talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mind will do a lot of things to protect your body.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, like, I'm sure it's probably happening like more times, you know, like somebody loses a limb or something like that. They're like, they move on and continue on doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly they look down and like, oh, my arm's gone.
Yep.
Oh.
And then they just die of shock.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jim in chat says the thing that is my stance. There are four different people named Max. Or there's four different people. There were like Steve and Joe and Bob and Doug. Mm-hmm. And they all had adventures. And over the centuries, all of those adventures were all attributed to this mythic figure named Mad Max.
Yeah. No, I could.
And so these are all fables being told.
They're amazing fables.
Yeah.
Some
good
of them.
Movies. At least three of them. Yeah. Some argue four. There are still people that say that the first Mad Max is great, and I maintain that those people haven't watched it in the last 30 years. But maybe I was just less forgiving of an hour and 45 minutes of somebody eating ice cream. On a beach. With his leather daddy police captain.
Yeah, he was awesome.
He was awesome.
I don't know if we have really much else to talk about.
CID this past week?
Oh, yeah, CID. No more 15-second rounds?
No more 15-second rounds.
Sexy.
I mean, that was already... I mean, that was kind of already redundant with the 7-turn limit.
It was redundant, so it was stupid, so it's good to see it gone. Yeah. Yep.
The other thing that was kind of surprising to me is I was expecting, because we had heard for a while that 3 out of the 6 scenarios in Steamroller were getting updated, I was kind of surprised because I had anticipated Spread the Net getting changed because it was... It was the most polarizing scenario of all of them. That I'm on the side of I really like Spread the Net, but that's the scenario that everybody either loves or hates. And I was kind of expecting it to get tweaked and somehow, and it didn't. And so I was honestly somewhat surprised that now, and if Steamroller 2018 looks like what the CID is, the average scenario is going to be more live than it was.
Like,
so
some of them you can score 6 points in a turn.
Yeah.
Like, bleh.
Yep. So, yes, we're talking about the Steamroller 2018 CID from Jim's question in the chat.
What other CID could we possibly be talking about?
That's supposedly coming out at Lock and Load then, right? Is it actually coming out? Like,
I don't know if they're going to ship. They might push it out before then.
Yeah, the I believe the expectation right now is that it will be live the day after Lock and Load. And yeah, that was we had a minor tweak to one of the scenarios. Two of the slower scenarios were pulled out in favor for new, also very fast scenarios. So I mean, get used to more scenario elements in the game. I think on the whole, the changes were good because the couple of slow scenarios were still often in situations where you didn't have a whole lot of scenario play. So now there's going to be scenario play in almost all games. I'm kind of disappointed that there wasn't anything done for incorporeal because I don't like the way that interacts with the scoring game. But I mean, it's nice to see that Privateer Press thinks that aggressive scenario play is how the competitive game should be played.
Yeah.
They also talked about the new champions format, and although
with the change to theme forces and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Realistically, I think more importantly than
you did a head shaky thing like that was news to you.
I didn't know that they were talking about champions.
The way they're changing ADR in both champions and masters, so it's an ADR change which affects both of those in their own way. Is there will be limited casters like it's been, but they will also have a limited number of theme forces that you're allowed to use. So it would be those casters in those or not in theme, I believe, is also accepted.
I think it must be in those themes.
It wasn't just however, they banned the other themes.
The last thing they were talking about that seemed to be on the side of doing it is removing ADR from masters and just setting up so that the only thing that separates masters from a normal Steamroller is that it has to have like all of the competitive boxes checked. Like, well, I mean, you have to be painted, you have to be in death clock. And what was the other rule? But it was basically
getting rid of the specialist mechanic. Then
that's different than normal masters. Normal masters didn't have to be painted. It was champions is the one that was
right. The, so the they're changing around, and so masters instead of being mechanically different would just be the upper, you know,
sure,
whatever. Which is silly because that means that events like Adepticon are automatically nothing but Masters events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah,
the other thing they with the ADR is that new casters would not automatically join the roster.
Well, okay. I think more so, I mean, more so than just in addition to adding the casters, they added the themes to the ADR. I think the more important difference there is that they said that instead of picking underplayed casters for ADR, which is what they have done in the past, and then adding new casters to that, they are specifically choosing casters to curate an interesting meta. For
they
champions.
Claimed originally that that's what they were doing. They when they first rolled out the ADR concept, they said it was that they wanted to have casters in your selection, not that they wanted to put individually underplayed casters in there, but put combinations that were underrepresented. Yeah. So if everybody who took Nemo 3 also took Sturgis 1, for example, they would just make sure that Nemo and Sturgis weren't on there at the same time. It wasn't just nobody takes Sturgis, shove him on there. Now, that might
That's what they were doing.
That's
kind of what it turned
but
into.
But their original claim was that they were doing what they are now again claiming they were doing. So take that for what it's worth.
Well, I mean, in the past, they were saying the idea was choosing stuff for underrepresented stuff.
That was not their original claim. Well, when they first rolled it out, they claimed it was to make combinations that were less seen, not individual casters.
I'm saying, but it's just the from the beginning, the motivation was to bring things to the table that weren't seen as often, whether that's individual casters or combinations.
Well, that's
and reward them by giving them the option for
the new
a sidebar.
Yeah, the new stated goal is not based on underplayed stuff or underplayed combinations, but instead of just putting together an interesting and balanced meta to deal with, which is why, like for Rhett, which seems to be underperforming recently, they have one of Alara 2 in Defenders, which is one of the highest performing Rhett setups right now, is in it, but they took away most of the power casters are not in it. And I was originally looking at it, and it's like, well, it's like the at the beginning of the week, the list they published, it's like, well, Denny 2 and Dreamer and Axis and who else? There was somebody else on the list, but Denny 2, Dreamer, and Axis, they're kind of going to dominate that. And then they revised the list and took out Denny 2, Dreamer, and Axis.
Oh, also, so, speaking of Axis and Dreamer, is that the ADRs won't all have four. So it won't be silly where, like, Convergence has four of their six and Grimkin have four of their five, you know.
Crucible Guard as well.
So those lesser ones might only have three to choose from, right?
Or two or something.
Two would be silly because then literally that's you have no options. Yeah. But
yeah, it's going to be – yeah, I think the expectation is that for the limited factions it'll be three casters and two themes. Mercenaries gets an extra caster. And you can't play the same theme in both of your pairings. So, I mean, I think this is interesting and more balanced, and probably a more balanced format, because the last list I saw, nothing really stood out as being top-tier stuff, although I will grumble that while I was happy to see Krios 3 in there, because he's one of my favorite casters, even though I don't think he's a top-tier caster, the original version had his Exemplar theme in it, and then they took out the Exemplar theme in the revised version, so...
As part of this SR 2018 CID, can they just sneak in a change to the Warhog and Sturmandrang? Because they don't need a whole pig CID. They just need to fix those two things.
I suppose.
Okay, sounds
just
good.
Ask them. Although, like, I think.
Can I just have my Mark II feet back? God.
Is the CID ending Friday or is it ending Tuesday? Because when is the new one coming out? Next Wednesday? This Wednesday?
The new Crucible Guard is supposed to be showing up on Wednesday.
Yep.
I think that the Steamroller was only last week, leading up until Monday.
Sure. Okay.
So up to this upcoming Monday. So yeah, I think they're done. They've got all their feedback. Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm pretty happy with the Steamroller 2018. I'm pretty happy with the champions, because looking at the list of champions, I say, wow, it's like there's nothing on here that I don't want to play. This should be an entertaining format, and hopefully it'll get a little more traction than Champions does right now, because I think around here only Rick has ever run a Champions event.
Generally, I've really only seen Champions happening at conventions.
Yeah.
It's I
I mean, Rick ran one.
Yeah, I can't even remember because it's been years since I ran just an event like at Pegasus as opposed to just the ATC and WITC. So I don't even remember if I ran one or not.
And and Champions really hasn't existed for more than 2 years now. Because it's a replacement for Hardcore.
Yeah.
That's basically what Hardcore used to be is Champions. And I think it's only been about 2 years.
Non-Euclidean Nick said, unless he missed an update, the limited factions were also possibly looking at only one theme. That is the last published CID document had only one thing, although in one of the dev threads they had talked about adding a second theme in there.
I mean, it's going to depend, right? Like Grimkin, if you give them two themes, that means literally they have no restrictions on themes.
Well, both their two casters have to be in different themes.
Sure, sure. The point, yeah.
Does that mean that potentially they might end up adding more themes to the factions? They only have two.
Well, how many only have two? Just Grimkin, right?
Grimkin. I would assume does
Convergence have three themes?
Oh, you're right. Yeah. You're
Convergence,
right.
And then
probably Crucible Guard. But
Crucible
we don't
know Guard
that
too.
Yeah.
Because minions have
Cephalix
three.
Only has one.
Cephalix or Mercs.
Cephalix doesn't have any. Yeah. Mercs have one that allows you to take Cephalix. Yeah.
I'm fingers crossed. I'm hoping eventually that Cephalix will be their own mini faction, similar to Crucible Guard in that, where they'll just, I mean, it'll be something just easy for them to flesh out that could take up that slot, unless they have so many other better ideas. But Cephalix need damn medium bases. They need a colossal. They need.
No, I am hoping more people run Champions events once this format comes out, because there's no Nemo 3, there's no Haley 3, there's no Harkovich, there's no casters that I look at and say, yes, I want to play this from day one, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's Champions is its own, and I'm happy with them doing it, as in the people who actually make the game doing it. Champions appears to be similar to their own like limits on what you can take in the game.
Yeah.
Rather than having somebody else give limits to what you can take in the game.
Yeah.
As in a third party.
I'll say I did.
Comp is that's the word I was looking at, is comp is.
Yeah. I did like the last version because, as I said, there's nothing that stood out to me as something I wanted to run in the format, because, as we have established, I am a horsefly. I am drawn to bullshit. And nothing really stands out on the list, so I think it'll be a fun format.
Yeah. I mean, for locally, though, I think obviously the painting qualification is the hard one.
Oh, locally, nobody's going to enforce that in an event.
My Rask lost an arm, and that makes me sad.
Did your other thing?
That's still in my tray. But I noticed yesterday that my Rask was missing an arm, and I have no clue whether it was missing it at the last tournament or not. Like, I don't know how long that's been missing.
Do you need another Rask? I have like four Rasks.
Well, this was nicely like pro painted. Oh. Like by one of was it Channing that painted all of Greg? Brian's?
Oh, so you got the one.
I got
Greg?
Brian's. Oh, so okay. Whoever painted all those, yeah. So they're really nice.
I might be able to help fix it.
Yeah, maybe. But I'll see if I can find the arm. It might be because I took him out of his foam to take him to the event, and so it might have just kind of stuck in the foam. On the other hand, I'm really lazy, and since that event, that tray with all of those models has just been sitting on the floor on the passenger side of my car. Your pig died. He was so shocked by what I said.
But yeah, no.
Yeah, so that's why I can't change lists now, is that the two lists I played yesterday are both just in the tray on the floor of my car. So that's what I'm going to use forever.
I can't speak any bit worse. I can't speak any better or worse.
You can't speak.
I can't speak. I don't know what the fucking word I'm trying to say, but it's not coming out of my mouth. But
I can't say anything because I'm no better.
Yes, that's it. Thank you. Because all my pikemen for my Kador are all just sitting in a random colossal box, all assembled, just dumped into the colossal box. So they're all brass rotted too. So that's a horrible waste of time when they get all bent up. Yeah.
Wah wah.
Bah, 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 bah.
But so if I want to play, and now it's even worse because at the event, I found two baggies just on a table, and so I used those. I put all the tokens for one list in one baggie and all the tokens for the other list in the other baggie, which was really actually convenient because then I didn't have to like sort them. Or, like when
did
I did a game, I just said, I'm playing this list. Huh?
Do the baggies have a hole in them?
Just the top if I open it.
Oh, okay.
But the point is, now if I'm going to try another quick aside to the chat, no change of heart on Barnabas Lord of Blood. He looks boring as shit, and fuck that guy. Lame. If I want to try another list, I have to like sort those tokens and dig shit out and dig models out, and that's just not worth it. I'm only ever going to play these two lists until I die now.
That's one of the things I like about being able to go and cut my own tokens is that I can just make one. I can make one complete set for each list, so yeah. I don't have to bother sorting them.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can see if I did an Arcadius list, if it would have zero overlap with my other two lists, in which case I can just grade the third baggie.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, no, it does have some overlap.
Rumpf.
That's a Frisky Dingo reference.
Yeah.
Okay.
You haven't watched Frisky Dingo?
I don't watch a lot of stuff.
We should add you to the movie series we're talking about setting up with Jake. Well, Jake's never seen stuff, so we're talking about making Jake watch movies. So
I'm all on board for making Jake watch movies.
Yeah, we'll have you watch movies with Jake, too, and then we can review them.
Well, the theoretical plan is still to marathon, I mean, not all at once, maybe like two or three per meeting, but watch the original Star Trek movies,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
1 through 6. But...
has Jake not seen any of those?
No, nope. No.
Jake has not seen that. He hasn't seen Snatch. He hasn't seen... Snatch is the big thing. He needs to see Snatch.
Yeah.
Goddamn, that movie's great.
It is the best movie by that guy.
What else did he do?
A lot of other things.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Rock and Roller, okay, the new King Arthur one. If it's British underworld, it's him. Right, with the Lock, Stock, and Snatch, yeah. And
not underworld as in vampires versus werewolves. Underworld, we're underworld talking like
you
like
know
gang,
crime
underworld.
Yeah,
I have to look it up too.
Yeah, he also did Madonna.
Yeah, it's Guy Ritchie.
Oh yeah, so she made him direct her in a remake of Castaway. Not the
Tom Hanks
one, but the Italian film, Castaway in the Beautiful Sea of Love or something was the original movie's title. I forget what the one he did with her is called, but it's a terrible movie, and the Italian movie was a terrible movie, and her version's even worse, and she sucks really bad in it.
Swept Away.
Okay.
Swept Away, yeah.
Revolver is not so great. Rock and Roll, I love.
You like Rock and Roll a lot.
Easily one of my favorites. Sure, the Sherlock Holmes are not bad.
They're bad. I forgot I did the two Sherlock Holmes, which again, London crime.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. King Arthur was okay. We
saying that Snatch is his best was not meant to be an insult to the
correct,
other films.
Correct.
Lock, Stock is great. Rock and Roll is great. Both the Sherlock Holmeses are good. Except for the massive plot hole in the second one, but that's okay. I'll get over it one of these days.
Solid B movie. The Kurgan is in those, and it's awesome. The Kurgan is like one of my favorite old WWE wrestlers. His finisher was the claw, when he would actually attach the claw onto people, and then he would refuse to let go of the claw, and he would just drag the people up the ramp and out the back of the Titantron.
I think you'll find that the Kurgan is actually a character from the Highlander.
Yeah.
And that the wrestler who did the claw was Mankind, who did the mandible claw.
The mandible claw is different than claw.
Also, as a kid, I was like, that doesn't make any sense, and I did the mandible claw to myself. It's really painful.
Oh, yeah, yeah. if you grab underneath
the tongue,
and just
pinch through the jaw,
yeah,
it's really fucking painful. I'm like, is that really? Oh, God! Yeah, I would tap out to that.
So much where you will have difficulty biting down to prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. yep. Anyway, we should probably go to Zappity Grumbles.
Really? Has it been like 45 minutes?
About an hour in.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Time flies when you're having time fly. Chat wanted to vote about Frisky Dingo versus Archer. And Archer is more polished, but Frisky Dingo is more inappropriate and dark, and that's okay.
I tried to watch Archer. I couldn't make it through the first episode.
Yeah,
Archer is a hard sell at the beginning. Once you get going and know the characters, it is a much better show.
It's one of those things where the first episode is hard, but when you go back and rewatch the first episode, it is just as good. It's just that you didn't know the characters enough. Like, they don't bother... They don't introduce you to shit. They just drop you in. And so it's just like picking up a show halfway through and not knowing what's going on. Rewatching this the pilot episode, it's a perfectly good episode of Archer.
But. Also, just as good as with Archer as a Raptor.
Yes. In fact, better.
probably better.
Everything's better when you replace the main character with a Velociraptor.
Frisky Dingo is really good. The nice thing about Frisky Dingo is it's good from... It's only two seasons, so it's first and second season. It's solid through. I could have done a little bit more. I've seen a little bit more of the Exticles
because
those guys were freaking amazing. But Frisky Dingo is good because it's an open shut series as compared to Archer. Unfortunately, like the most recent seasons of Archer have been. Not so good. The Archer in Dreamland was...
I don't even know if Archer's still on. That's how little I care anymore because of how bad... Like, I really liked Archer Vice. And then there was the one after that where, like, Archer ended up dying. And then there was another season where it's, like, 1920s film noir, which I think is the Dreamland one. And I didn't even watch that season.
I like, Jim and I, we watch shows here on Fridays, and... He's always liked Archer, and we started watching Archer Dreamland, and like after like the third episode into it, like, this is not even funny. This is just fucking bad.
I also feel like even the seasons before that, like the last one at ISIS, although they changed the name once ISIS became a thing in the real world, and then the There's callbacks, and callbacks are funny, and there's running gags, and running gags are funny, and then you get to the point where of your 20-minute episode that, let's say, has 100 jokes in it, 85 of those jokes are either callbacks or running gags, and I'm tired.
Or just catchphrases.
I'm tired of your catchphrases, callbacks, and running gags, and Archer really started going to being nothing but callbacks, catchphrases, and running gags.
That's what the public wants, though. I mean, the general public appears that that's what they want. They want the jokes. That's why wrestling, I enjoy the little sight things that they do in wrestling, but then eventually they're just pandering to the audience because that's all the... Right. That's what happens to some of these awesome things.
I'm wondering if I could use a machine learning algorithm to randomly generate new episodes of Archer, if it's that.
Did you read the randomly generated chapter of
Harry Potter?
Harry Potter?
No, I mean, I've done some of the stuff with like randomly generating Shakespeare and offering up to a friend of mine as campaign plot hooks.
There was a Harry Potter one a couple months ago that like hit Facebook, and it's glorious. Yep. It is some of the height of literature.
it's there.
I'll send you a link later. You need to read it. It's amazing. I was laughing to incoherency when I was reading the damn thing and really into like, what's wrong with you? And then 10 minutes later when I could breathe, I showed it to her. I think I may have just thrown my phone at her while in the fetal position. It was solid.
So a normal day at home.
It's about normal.
So, did you see this tweet? I'm just showing this to Nathan.
Oh yes, I had seen that. Yeah,
Did you see this tweet, David? If you want to read it out,
from Sarah O'Connor, a robot has killed a worker in a VW plant in Germany.
Then reply, her next chat.
Okay, I should have thought about my name and its associations before tweeting this.
Yeah, and then she's like, I've never even watched the films. Now my feed is full of people tweeting me about Skynet. Guys, I don't know what Skynet is, and I wouldn't follow me. I tweet really boring stuff about unit wage costs and the like.
This is an amazing Twitter stream of the poor gal named Sarah Connor tweets about a robot killing humans.
Yeah.
Well, that's like the research project I'm on. It's funded by DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency.
Oh.
And so, I mean, I work in software engineering and especially applying artificial intelligence to software engineering. And so we were kind of joking that because we're doing artificial intelligence and specifically using AI stuff to automatically generate new programs, and we're doing this for the Defense Department, we were just joking that what we were really working on was Skynet. And so then one day we have this meeting. We're out in Annapolis having this meeting about what we're going to do to demonstrate it. And the guy that's running the project said, "You know what would be really cool is if to demonstrate your guys' technology, if you could use the AI to automatically generate an autopilot for a drone." And so we were talking at the table. Then everybody goes silent, and it's like everybody's
this is a bad idea.
So you guys do want us to make Skynet?
Like I don't want to ever be seen or videotaped like kicking a robot.
Right.
Like all the people, that are at that initiative that they're building those cool ass mule things. I don't want
to come for them.
Yeah, they're dead. They're going to be the first ones to die in the robot overlords when they come to kill us all.
The greatest thing about the DARPA robot like challenges and stuff like that is the people who took the footage of all the robots falling down and then they overdubbed JR from WWE just being, "Oh my god, oh how could he live past that?" And it's the greatest thing because JR is the greatest thing.
He is. He was great when he was calling football.
Yeah,
he was,
anything he'll call. Oh, he's just so good.
Speaking of the XFL,
it's coming back.
It's coming back.
It'll be terrible, but it's coming back.
I have faith in the Vinny. Not just because I'm a WWE fan, but I have faith that last time the XFL came around, it had
some interesting
too
ideas.
Many cooks. They had NBC.
Well, I mean, at the same time, the previous XFL, it was kind of like to take away a lot of the protection, so there would be harder hits. But they're not doing it this time. So what's the point?
Well, yeah, so there was some interesting stuff they did in the previous XFL that they could still do. Like, I enjoyed the fact that there was no kick for a point after your touchdown. You did basically a two-point conversion, but if you ran it in, you got two, and if you passed in, you got one, or something like that. But the point is, it forced a more active game. The more violent game, yeah, they're not going that route. But a more active game, there's ideas that could be there. Yeah.
So one of the things they mentioned too is that basically if you have a criminal record, you're not allowed.
Sure, right. And that's the thing is making a competitor to the NFL is feasible, but doing the 1990s Extreme Mountain Dew Challenge version that they did the last time is not.
No, and then that's kind of what they went wrong with the original XFL. Yeah. They highlighted players to be the personalities of the teams, and that's not exactly. I mean, the NFL does it now, you know, with certain players, but I don't think it was appropriate for them to do at the time.
Oh, fucking Chris Collinsworth.
He's horrible. I would much rather have JR do it, Mike.
Is it really the NFL or is it the broadcast networks that show the games?
It's Chris Collinsworth.
No, oh, yeah,
it's him. Chris Collinsworth that boils down every team to one or two people because, man alive, does he suck?
Yeah.
He is the worst. God. He's not. Hold on. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman could go die. Well, actually, Troy Aikman's actually pretty good being impartial, even though he's from Texas and he really loves.
Troy Aikman. Yeah, Troy Aikman's not bad. I mean, Troy Aikman is kind of overly focused on the quarterback, and he has this habit of excusing bad quarterback play that is annoying, but Joe Buck is the one that I find difficult to listen to.
Yeah. But as Arctic Circle is pointing out in the chat though, is a football without criminal records, can that be a thing? And I think that's something that I think Vinny wants to do is he wants to have a clean program.
Well, at the same time, how many NFL players do have criminal records?
Well, a lot of the big mouthpieces do. I mean, he wants to prevent people like Ray Rice. He wants to prevent people from, you know, abusing their children.
Does Pac-Man Jones have a criminal record, or does he just stomp on people's faces with his cleats and that's not technically illegal?
No, that's Namakasu.
He sucks too. Pac-Man Jones is the dirtiest player in any sport ever.
Yeah,
but
he's got Pac-Man fever.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
but I mean, having a clean the striving to be a cleaner game, you know, with cleaner players, I'm all for it. I mean, it could be good. It could be horrible.
It's not our money.
It's coming out of Vince McMahon. And Vince McMahon's fronting the whole damn thing. So you know, hey, you know. If I can buy some Chicago Enforcers jerseys again, that would actually be awesome.
If the refs make a bad call, will Vince McMahon run out and blow out both of his quads and then just sit in the 50-yard line and refuse to move?
When did he do that? When was that?
That was a Royal Rumble where the two people went over the edge at the same... Their feet literally hit at the same time.
Yeah.
So they didn't know how to resolve it. And so he was legitimately so angry that the storyline had been fucked up that he ran out, jumped in the ring to start yelling at people. But as soon as he jumped in the ring and he took one step and both of his quads blew out and just collapsed on the ground. And he just propped himself against the ropes because he couldn't walk. And just started yelling at people.
2015 University of Texas Dallas study found that NFL players actually have a lower arrest rate than the population at large.
Mm-hmm. He was also probably, I believe Vince was also catering to all the rhetoric at the time too. Because he was saying too, no players will be able to protest certain things, you know. Like,
oh, well, fuck them then.
Take a knee.
But no, that's just the I wanted to fact check that because I didn't think that the NFL actually has a problem with criminal records.
I don't think it's a problem. I think it's
a low blow, and it's the implications of that are kind of shitty.
Yeah, I mean, you have people like Ray Rice that you know,
and if he actually said that, like, oh, I'm not going to let my players protest, well, then he can fuck himself, and I'll never watch a game. I mean, fuck you. Yeah, like whatever.
Yeah. Well, do we have anything else?
There was at least one Zappity Grumble, remember? Because you cheated and read it earlier.
Oh, I did cheat and read it earlier. I have to see if I can find it again. Somebody posted it.
If you were stranded on a desert island and could only bring one book to burn, which one would it be?
Yeah, that's actually exactly the quote. So I already chose mine. Mine is The Art of the Deal. By Donald Trump. But I was thinking, though, too, is we should probably find a book with more substance than just hot air.
So I went along that route,
sure,
and I have a brilliant idea, right?
Okay.
I'm thinking practically. I'm burning this thing for warmth. I'm cooking my food on it. I want something that'll last a long time.
War and Peace.
Nope. No. See, you're thinking small. The never-ending story.
Oh.
Burn it a page at a time. Never ends. Never ends, baby. I have infinite fuel.
I was thinking
your War and Peace lasts like a day tops. Never ending story forever.
You could probably do War and Peace in 2 days. I'm not saying that. I would say it's probably a partial fire starter. But yeah, no. Art of the Deal would be a good one too.
Never ending story. Infinite fuel. Get on my level, noobs, scrubs.
David didn't really say it.
But he's Googling something. He's probably Googling what's the biggest book in the world.
I want to say I'm trying to look for one. There are works with over 10,000 pages here listed.
Sure. But you know what's more than 10,000? Never ending.
Nathan, you know that it's like the book has a finite page count.
Nope.
There's an end to it.
That would be false advertising, which is illegal. The story must never end. That's the law. The law, David.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, if I burn it, I won't have to read about the rock biter and his strong hands failing him and cry. They look like such strong hands.
Or you have to deal with Artax in the swamp.
And yeah, well, you know.
There was a 17th century French.
Because that's the noise he made as he slowly sank in it.
A buddy of mine, like, he posted a thing about how like Facebook algorithms are weird and that it just recommended a random article to him. And he's like, I don't know why you recommend this article to me. And the article was The Stars of the Neverending Story. What do they look like now? Mm-hmm. And I said, I know at least one of them. And I posted a picture of a horse skeleton and he was very upset with me.
I've never seen that movie.
There was a 17th century French novel that was 13,000 pages long. So that would probably be the first one to pick.
I would choose this book right now. They didn't actually say the name of the book.
What the hell?
But the largest book measures 5 meters by 8 meters. Weighs...
Sure, it's fewer pages, but they're bigger.
A ton and a half.
Oh, yeah. You were thinking of volume of volume,
Only because this is 429 pages.
Huh? 429?
Only
sure, but those pages are 100 times as large.
Yeah. Over 50 people took part to in the construction of the book, which is titled "The Prophet Muhammad." So that would
you probably shouldn't burn that. Although, if anybody came to yell at you, maybe you could talk them into getting you off the island first.
That's true. That's true. You could probably burn the foreword for it.
I would avoid burning religious texts. Because even if somebody here doesn't yell at you, what if it turns out you're wrong and you're picked?
You get
in trouble. Like, I think Mormons are dumb, but I'm not burning their book on the off chance they're right.
For the record, I was just literally looking up the largest book in the world. I wasn't.
You didn't realize.
I didn't realize
that you were a sacrilegious, terrible person.
Yeah, what book it was until I started reading it out loud. And like, oh no, this is not good at all. So that's basically it for Zapping Your Goblins. Uh-huh. So we should go to recommendations.
I had one, and then I forgot it because I thought of one earlier during this, and then I forgot that one too.
I'll say it. You should watch The Tick. Mm-hmm. The Tick show came out.
Any Tick show.
Second half. I'd say this show is set more in realism than any of the other previous Ticks. This one is definitely less just wacky characters and more of just. It is more realistic than the previous ones. It's still crazy, wacky, but I mean, there's no Die Flattermouse. There's no, Bat-Manuel.
Apocalypse Cow.
I mean, but overall, it has a very nice, cohesive story that fits well together. I mean, if they were to end the series as it is now, it'd be perfect. Besides a cliffhanger.
Sure, well, you have to.
But I really appreciate all the callbacks.
Peter Serafinowicz.
Yes.
Which he's great.
Which I'm happy about a couple things. One was the original pilot. My major complaint of it is that the suit looks like shit. And they changed it. And they had a callback to it in the show itself. And they had a lot of nice callbacks for the show, going back to previous Tick things too. With Spoon and et cetera, other things.
Sure. Yeah.
But Tick, easy free if you have Amazon Prime. If not, if you just purchase it through Amazon, you can watch it through their video store. And it's probably not very expensive.
Isn't there like a free trial month of Amazon Prime, and then you could just watch it and then cancel your Amazon Prime?
Yeah. It's worth it. It is great. In Danger Boat. I've mentioned this before on my Facebook feed. Danger Boat is probably my new favorite character, but I also like Tinfoil Kevin. Tinfoil Kevin he's the glue. He holds everything together. Zappity.
Any Tick series has great Tick. I mean, the side characters are always such a highlight.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
Like the Deflator Mouses of the old series, or freaking Sewer Urchin. Like, they know how much everybody hated Aquaman, so they made their version of Aquaman literally live in the sewers and just swim around and shit and talk to rats and cockroaches. But he's also a really cool guy.
Was it Superion from the comics? Is that Clark Oppenheimer's alternate identity?
I don't remember.
I can't remember, but I was praying that we would see that sequence of the Tick working as a reporter with Clark Oppenheimer. Who is, like, I think Superion. I think that was who he was. But, man, I just want that sequence of them typing on a keyboard. It doesn't matter what it was. Like, Clark Oppenheimer just click, 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 click. And the Tick is just watching me. He's like, click.
Yeah.
Click. Oh, God.
Oh, my God. I love that the pilot episode of the premise of the pilot episode of the previous live-action one, where a villain gets a hold of a Soviet-era robot that's programmed to assassinate the president, and so they activate it, and it immediately goes to murder Jimmy Carter. Because that's what its programming was. It's just fucking going after Carter. That's brilliant.
Yeah, the Patrick Warburton series is really good.
All three Tick series. The Tick is one of my favorite, and they haven't failed. Every time they bring it back, I'm like, oh, come on, be good. And it's It's consistently good. And just, they keep recapping magic. I assume Ben Edlund is involved with the newest one.
Yep.
And that's part of it. It's keeping the original creator on over and over.
I think he directed like the pilot episode. And I know he's been handling either production credits or writing credits.
Ben Edlund is just so good in general. Like he does some sneaky good stuff too. Like he did a whole bunch of the later Buffy's and Angel's,
sure.
Like Smile Time, the episode where Angel turns into a puppet, and the whole there's evil Sesame Street basically. Like there's Sesame Street, but the puppets are actually like demons and they suck children's souls through the television. And that's how they feed themselves. And so Angel has to fight them, and he gets turned into a puppet. So this whole battle is just between like Muppets are fighting each other, and like he even does his evil vampire face, and there's a Muppet version of that. It's amazing. So Ben Edlund's good.
I've never watched any all the way through. I never watched any of Buffy or Angel.
It's good stuff,
which is weird because I am surrounded by basically all my friends.
Yeah,
like Chris, Jen, Brian, and them. They've all watched it. And I don't know why I just haven't. I think Chris's kids are named after
Buffy
characters from the series.
Buffy goes way downhill after season 3. Like 4 is still good, and then 5 and like there's a steady drop.
Sure,
my mind, but meh. At the very least, the first 3 seasons of Buffy are 3 of the best seasons of television.
I know I need to watch a show too because I was unaware of his gloriousness until I watched the Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Sure. Oh,
but Anthony Head. Yep. is so good. I guess that's my second recommendation is Repo, the Genetic Opera. It's really good. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, yeah. That's something we should pop into.
Repo, the Genetic Opera is.
Do you like musicals at all?
Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is one of my favorite films.
That's not a musical. It just has a good soundtrack.
It does have a really good soundtrack. It's
up there as far as best soundtracks.
I was saying that because it's kind of a musical, but not really.
I mean, the music is very central to the story, you know. And
there's no sequence.
At least 3 of the songs. No. Actually, there's more than that. Because "Oh Death," I believe, is sung by the sheriff as he's going to hang the one.
Oh, yeah.
The sirens actually sing.
Yeah.
The people sing for the baptism. Mm-hmm. The KKK people actually sing.
Yeah.
Like, the songs are sung. And the little girls sing. Like, actually, it might be every song in the soundtrack is sung by someone in the series. Yeah, that is actually interesting. That hadn't occurred to me. But they're not sung in their entirety, and the songs aren't plot. Like, people aren't singing what's happening in the plot like they oftentimes do in musicals.
Great.
I mean, at that point, I think you're arguing semantics.
I don't think I am.
I don't think it's
a musical. So what makes it a musical, then?
In the musical, it isn't just people singing. The songs are almost a replacement of dialogue, right? They are singing what would normally be communicated through dialogue. It is plot. And the characters are you, the viewer. They aren't really singing. The characters are speaking to each other, but is represented to us, the viewer, as singing.
Okay.
If this was something actually happening, they just would say, "Hey, buddy, let's go to the mall." But us viewing it, they're like, "Hey, we're going to the mall. Aren't we going?" And people start dancing in the background.
Okay. Is that the Crippled System musical?
Sure.
We just go to the mall.
Yes. Whereas in this, it's more like kind of when a soundtrack has a song actually be on the radio, you know, where it's in the film as a song that the characters are interacting with, but it isn't the characters.
Okay, that's a fair distinction. But I mean, the music was very central to it.
And very, very correct to
central plot elements. And I mean, the sirens I think the sirens would qualify in that.
They would qualify more than any other song would.
But that would be in their nature themselves being sirens.
Right.
No. Yeah.
But again, I just think a character in the story, the character is just singing a song, which is different than dialogue is being expressed through song. And I think that's the distinction. But yeah, that is a good one, though.
Yeah.
What was the question?
I'm not sure.
Repo the Genetic Opera.
That was like a very good discussion for our podcast that doesn't
well, I just fucking love musicals and I love films, so you're combining two things.
But Repo is It's Anthony Head at his best. It's got Paul Sorvino in it as well, who's actually a classically trained opera singer.
Sarah Brightman is in it, and she was in the original cast of Phantom of the Opera. She played Christine Daae.
Also, oddly enough,
Paris Hilton.
Paris Hilton is in it. And honestly, not bad.
She is the correct casting choice for that character.
Correct.
Like, she's
correct. It's got a lot of blood and gore in it because it's, you know, by those folks, but it's probably one of my favorites.
Well, was it Repo Man that it's actually, or no, because Repo Man's the one with the cars, right? There was an actual non-musical version of the exact same story that was relatively recent.
It came out right around the same time. I believe it was Repo Man, where they basically, so the whole idea of Repo, the genetic opera, is people get, you know, if they need a heart transplant or something like that, they get a heart transplant and they have to borrow money to...
Repo Men came out 8 years ago. There's a movie from like the 80s called Repo Man. Yeah. And that's what was fucking with my brain. But go on, sorry.
Correct. And that's with Charlie Sheen and...
Yes.
And,
Repo Men is with Forrest Whitaker and Jude Law.
Sure. But it, basically you have to borrow for, you know, you making payments for your synthetic heart or whatever it is. You can't make payments, they come and take it.
They repossess it, just like if you can't make your car payments.
Yep. And, you know, if you die, you die.
Yep.
Because
that's their property.
That's their property.
It's like the car repo guy doesn't care that you can't get to work. That's not his problem.
Correct.
You ain't paying. He's taking it back.
Yeah, and it's overall, it's like a kind of like a metal opera. So if you like metal operas, it's... Repo is fairly solid in there.
It's tough.
All right. That was my two recommendations. I took up like 20 minutes there.
Yeah, I still can't remember what mine were. Sorry.
On the topic, I'll recommend O Brother, Where Art Thou? If you haven't seen it, it is an excellent, excellent film on many different layers.
We've talked about the Coen Brothers on
anything Coen Brothers.
Anything Coen Brothers, yeah.
They're just... freaking amazing. I mean, as compared to like David Lynch, has touched like the... and just about
recommend David Lynch's Dune, and that's the only David Lynch film I'll recommend. I will anything from the Coen Brothers is worth watching.
I will recommend watching David Lynch's Dune in as much as there is a 50% chance it'll be the worst goddamn thing, but you deserve to experience it.
To be honest with you, the special effects still stand. I mean, the set design and that still stand the test of time, I think. From the last time I saw the film, which was about maybe 15 years ago, it still felt like the sequence where this giant slug comes into the room. I don't know what...
The Spacing Guild?
Yeah, yeah. Where they have like almost like a train car comes in,
yeah,
and then he's inside of it.
Yeah.
The effects for that would just are actually... I think they were probably all practical anyway, but it's still visually... a nice movie to watch. A little dated, but not as much.
I figured out my recommendation.
Oh.
It's kind of corner casey. So, I was stopping by Raylene's work, just visit or whatever, and they got off my way, and they have, like, some snacks for a buck up at the front.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some weird shit, some, like, oddly not, like, normal mainstream American stuff. It's almost more like stuff you'd see at, World Market or whatever.
Okay.
Like they have like the chocolate pandas and stuff like that. And they have the actual black licorice, the Aussie brand and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And there was from a company called 7 Days.
Which, 7 Days to Die?
Yep. Days to Die. Which if I die in 4 more days after eating these 3 days ago, it was worth it.
Well, there's a great zombie.
I know.
Game. Oh, go, sorry.
So this company is called 7 Days, which according to this little article I'm looking at says a snack company more known in Europe than the U.S. So maybe this is not a corner case thing to non-Americans, but to us Wisconsinites, you can get it for a buck at Shopko. Okay.
Yeah. Do any non-European or non-Americans listen to us?
Company. Yeah, we got Europeans that listen to us. We got Pip, Will Hahn. He listens to us.
We
had an Australian until I pissed him off. So 7 Days. This is a line of theirs called Pizzetti, Pizzetti. They actually look they look like bagel chips, right? They're round with the hole in the middle. The one I got was Emmentaler, tomato, and olive.
That actually sounds really good.
It was fucking amazing. This is like my new favorite snack. I was looking in the grocery store to see if I could find bigger bags. If I can't, I'm just going to go spend $100 on 100 of these dollar bags. And I'm going to get the other two flavors too. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was not the Emmentaler tomato olive. It was the Emmentaler tomato garlic was the one I got.
That also sounds excellent.
But fuck. Like, I got it, and I'm just shoving it in my mouth, waiting for Raylene. And then she gets, because we carpooled, so I was waiting for her. She gets in, and I'm like, you should try one of these. They're shockingly good. And she ate one, and she's like, give me that back. And she started shoving them in her face. Fucking hell. That was, like, the best snack I've had.
Sounds like your reaction.
This is my Cheds.
Yeah, it's your Cheds.
This is my Cheds. Yeah, I will.
Oh my god, Cheds.
I will bring.
Yes.
Okay.
You gave me one.
Yeah. I will bring at least that flavor. I might buy all three flavors and let you each have one chip from each of the three flavors next week, and then we can fight over the rest of the bag. But I'll make sure there's only two left in each bag, so you each can have one.
I can set up another webcam with just like of you sitting in a corner crying, eating them.
So good. So fucking good. So if you live a place where you look for those, Pizzetti by 7 Days, good.
That's weird, though. So there's a European snack food that's available at Shopko in the middle of Madison.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Shopko, they tend to do more localization stuff now, too, because they have a lot of smaller stores. Mm-hmm. Like my hometown of Mayville, which has got 5,000 people in it, has a Shopko there. So maybe if there's some demand for it that they ended up putting into the store from the area.
Yeah.
Now there's obviously a new demand for it.
This review says the Emmentaler tomato and olive was his favorite, so I'll have to try. I'm going to, on your way, my way home now, I'm going to go to Shopko and buy all three flavors.
Depends on the olive. Is it green?
Let me see the picture, if I can find the picture.
The bag looked green, so if it's green olives, I am all for it.
It looks like Kalamata's.
I don't know. The
Kalamata are the ones that you get in, like, when you get, like, a Greek salad that has the feta cheese, and they're not like black olives, because black olives have a very smoky...
No taste.
Yeah. Kalamata are more vinegary, like green olives. Kalamata's are the best olive.
Okay. I probably would like it, but I am a huge fan of green olives. Yeah. I can eat green olives forever.
I will bring Kalamata olives next time. I always have at least two jars of Kalamata olives, one at work and one at home, because I love olives. I found a recipe for deep fried garlic and olives, and I posted it on Facebook, and I don't know why any other food still exists.
I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah. The thing that even if you do, because I was looking just for deep frying garlic, because... Fuck yeah. And the thing they said to do was you simmer it for like a minute in water, and then you dump the water, the garlic cloves. You do that again, then you dump the water. Then the third time you simmer for about 5 minutes. You test until it's soft, and then you dump the water, drain, and deep fry that, because that takes some of the harshness out of it and makes it more of just the mellow garlic flavor without being just huge in your face. What, Andy?
I'm wondering if this would gross anybody out, but I'm not a cook. I'm just wondering if this would work. How big of olives could you get that would be the green variety?
You can get ones that are pretty big. Like, I've seen ones almost as big as your thumb.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, you can get pretty big.
Could you
go to a fancy grocery store and look at if they're a properly fancy grocery store, they have an overpriced olive bar, or they have giant big honking olives, probably stuffed with garlic.
Hollow them
out. Now I'm going to deep fry them.
Yeah. Well, they're hollow by nature because they're a pitted product.
Yeah. Put in cream cheese.
Sure.
Bread them.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And make up your olive poppers.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably doable. In fact, I think I've had olives with... I might have had, like, literally that, just not breaded. I think I've had olives with cheese in the middle, not deep fried.
The plan was the plan here, Andy, was deep fried.
I assume,
right?
He's going full poppers style.
Deep fry like jalapeno poppers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it would be olive poppers. I'm wondering if that would actually be taste good or not.
I'm going to have to pull out the deep fryer now.
To make some olive poppers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that actually everything deep fried is good? Welcome to Wisconsin.
Yeah. I'm on a low carb diet, so I'll bread it with pork rinds.
Yeah, sure.
Which is something you can do.
Pretty much anything pickled, I'm a fan of. I like actual pickles, and then you get like pickled red onions. Uh-huh. Olives are a pickled product.
Mm-hmm.
Even like now, because I've been trying them, trying to push this, the old fashioned, which you like eating at, they have like a It's not even on their menu. Well, it might be on the menu, but they have like classic bar food for like a buck, including pickled eggs and pickled pig's feet, because those are the classic. I bought those. I'm like, here's $2. Bring them to me. I want to check these off my bucket list. They were pretty good.
I would pickled only pig's do it feet, as a bucket list thing.
The pickled pig's feet was basically ham with a vinegar flavor to it, which I like those things. The pickled egg was just a hard-boiled egg, again, with some vinegar flavor to it, and I like those just fine. Yeah, you pickle almost anything, because apparently I just like vinegar. Balsamic vinegar, you can just drink, too. Like, if you get high enough quality balsamic vinegar, you can just sip it like a fine scotch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what Brian was
saying. You don't even need high quality balsamic vinegar to do that.
Well, you can sip anything.
Yeah.
But in theory, you shouldn't drink certain things.
All
yes.
right.
Wrap them in bacon before deep frying, yeah. Jim says. Yes, yes, that seems like a plan, too.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to try making some.
We'll just deep fry everything.
Some olive poppers. We're not going to have the episode here with the fryer either, because I don't want an arrested development situation.
Son of the cornballer, was that what it's called? Yeah. Ooh, balsamic on vinegar on vanilla ice cream. Yes. Another great thing on vanilla ice cream: cracked black pepper, fresh cracked. Just crack some black pepper over your vanilla ice cream or over your cottage cheese.
Oh God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The pepper really highlights the creamy flavor by being just, the opposite.
Fresh cracked black pepper is good on like everything.
Well, yes, yeah. Yes. Just
I mean, that's creamy. they don't call it the king of spices. Wait, for nothing.
Did you say fuck you? Cumin's the king of spices.
No, it's officially it's the black pepper.
Did bastards. You say? Need did you say cream cheese or cottage cheese?
Cottage cheese.
Okay, all right. So I thought my mind went into a weird place. Like, why would you put that on cream cheese? It's not. Weird.
I don't know. Put some cream cheese on crackers. Put some cracked black pepper on top of there. That might be delicious. Well,
put some cream cheese with some cottage cheese.
Yeah,
on
sure.
a bagel. Toast it.
Yeah, on some pizzettis.
Yeah.
I will spread cream cheese on my pizzetti. Put some cracked black pepper on top of there. Put some cottage cheese on top of that. Put some balsamic vinegar on top of that. Shove it inside of an olive. Wrap it in bacon and deep fry it.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, perfect. Folks. All right.
That's the official food of our podcast now.
We're going to go make some food. It's better than crackers and eggs.
Raw eggs and saltines.
Thanks for watching, folks. Bye.
All right.
Raw egg. Fucking geezy.
Exactly.